Hello and welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host. Oh, I hope you were with me last week. I'd suffer ventricular tachycardia if it came to my attention, became within my ken, that you had missed the Nonprofit Outcomes Toolbox. Dr. Robert Penna, author of the Nonprofit Outcomes Toolbox, discussed the wave of reliance on outcomes measurement and gave concrete steps and tools so that small and mid-sized shops can stay ahead of the trend toward outcomes assessment. That was part one of our interview from an earlier show. And news sources, new source. Maria Semple, our doyenne of dirt cheap and free ideas, is also the prospect finder. And last week she had advice for you on which news sources are best for your research, and also a new free source from the Foundation Center, Foundation Directory Online. This week, the Nonprofit Outcomes Toolbox, part deux from a previous show, and optimize your social profiles. Amy Sample Ward, our social media contributor, has tips to fine-tune your profiles on the social networks like Twitter and Facebook, while staying true to mission and brand. Also, using your profiles to promote campaigns, and Amy's 60-second style stop. She's the CEO of Nonprofit Technology Network, N10, and her book is Social Change, Anytime, Everywhere. Got lots of guests live in the studio, so there's going to be lots of extra special live listener love, as well as everybody listening worldwide. We'll get to that. Right now, we'll get to my previous interview with Dr. Robert Penna and the Nonprofit Outcomes Toolbox. Bringing Robert Penna, welcoming him back now. We were just before the break talking about the outcome statement. Should be meaningful, achievable, sustainable. And the book goes into a little more detail even. And I'd like to, because I'd like to help our listeners achieve an outcome statement. You say that it should be bound in time and number, the outcome statement. What does that mean?
Well, what it basically means is, rather than saying we're going to change the world, it's that we're going to specifically change a certain measurable facet or characteristic of someone for a certain number of people within a certain given period of time. So the idea is that we're going to achieve X for Y number of people within 2 months, 3 months, 1 year, whatever it may be. So that the idea is that first off, it's tethered to a certain number of people that you're going to achieve this for, and also a certain specific time. So that, for example, the investor knows when the payoff comes. Let me give you another reason why this is crucial. If you read the book, as I know you did, you probably came across the word capacity 10,000 times. Capacity.
You don't have to read the book to hear about capacity building in nonprofits.
No. But here, this is a very, very specific use. If you have an outcomes approach, it automatically begs the capacity question. Because if you are clear about what it is you want to achieve, from that flows what it is you need to get there, which then challenges you to say, do I have that capacity? Most nonprofits, and I hate to use generalizations, but I think in this case it's true. Most nonprofits and most people who are aware of the nonprofit space, when you talk about capacity building, the first thing they will think about is dollar signs. All right, we're having a capacity raising effort. It's a fundraiser. True capacity, however, has three levels. All right, the first one is structural capacity. How is the organization run? How is it managed? What's the relationship between the board and the executive leadership? What's the quality of the training of the staff, etc.? The second is what I call functional capacity. Basically, what that means is, if you go, do you have the tools to do what you say you're going to do? If you're an education organization, then you need educators. You need a curriculum. If you're a counseling organization, you need counselors, and you need some sort of modality.
These are all your inputs.
Yes, exactly. The third one, and perhaps the most important one, is the implementation capacity. These are the 1,001 little things that not just nonprofits, but anybody trips over when it comes to actually doing a job. It could be, for example, Tony, you or I are going to put up a curtain rod, and it turns out we don't have a level. Well, if we don't have a level, how are we going to make sure the curtain rod is level? That's an implementation capacity issue. When you talk about a nonprofit, it could be everything from the requirement to provide transportation so that the clients can actually get there, to something like intake. If you're going to have 75 people, let us say, graduate from your program, well, do you have the capacity for an intake to actually process those 75 people so they're not standing online 3 hours and losing interest and wandering away? Who's going to answer the phones? Let's say you have an outreach effort going on, and you have a training program, and you put the word out on the street. But then it turns out that your nonprofit is really run all by part-timers, and most of the time, if anybody calls to get information, they're either going to get just a phone that rings, or they're going to get an answering machine. That's a capacity question. So if you're doing this correctly, it really forces you to look at a number of things, including the capacity that you have to actually achieve the goals. If you don't have it, then you either have to upgrade the capacity or perhaps scale back the goals.
And flowing from this quantification of what you want outcomes to be is measurable, because they become measurable when you've quantified and bound in time and number.
Well,
so we can, in fact, measure things that have previously been sort of just vague sort of objectives.
Well, let me give you a classic example. And this may sound like a bit of a stretch to your readers, but you and I being roughly the same age, I think you'll follow.
You have readers. We have listeners.
Oh, that's right.
Our reader listeners, because they're all going to buy your book.
My readers.
Which is the Nonprofit Outcomes Toolbox, published by Wiley.
You recall when we were kids, we had things like Lincoln Logs and erector sets.
I remember. They were even wood. Lincoln Logs were made of wood.
Right. Okay. This is going to sound like a bit of a weird one, but think back when you were building one of those things to when your mother baked a cake. Your mother baked the cake, she took all the ingredients, she poured them in a bowl, she put them in a pan, she put it in the oven, and she lost at that point total control of what was going on. No one's going to know whether the cake was good or bad until after it was done, it came out, it was cooled, and you tasted it. And if something wrong, there was nothing you could do. Think back, however, to the example of the Lincoln Logs or the Tinker Toys or the Erector Set. We had a guide. The guide showed us step by step where we should be at every point in time. If at any point in time what we were building didn't look like the picture, we could stop. We could go back and we could fix it. That's one of the differences of working with outcomes as opposed to not. When you don't work with outcomes, all you have to do, the only position you're in, is to hope for a good end result. But you can't control it because you have no idea really what's going on with the variables. If you're tracking using an outcome system, right, and it is bound in time and it is bound in number, and you do know that by a certain date, X number of people should be at stage 4. If they're not there, then you still have time to fix it. If you have no clue where they're supposed to be, or what, all you can do is hope for a good result at the end. And if you don't get it, well, then what do you do? Say, sorry, better luck next time?
You don't know that as a child, I actually had an Easy Bake Oven. I didn't have the Lincoln Logs. My brother had the Lincoln Logs. I had the Easy Bake Oven. They should also be your outcome statement verifiable. And this is all really, I'm breaking it down the way you do in the book, but it just flows naturally from the way you're describing it. We have to be able to verify where we are, time versus goal, and reassess. Say more about verifiability.
Well, verifiability basically means that some third party can look at it without spending a ton of money, because, again, this is not to take anything away from professional evaluators, but evaluation costs money. And professional evaluators and professional evaluation services. I mean, these people are very good at what they do. But the point is that hopefully what you're doing is verifiable in an easier way. I mean, there's an old saying, chicken soup is good for the soul. Well, it could be, but it's hard to tell. You know, what you want to do is you want to stick to things that have some fairly easily discernible evidence that can be seen. And that's what it means by verifiable. It means staying away from outcomes that talk about, as you said before, somebody feels better about themselves and their place in the universe. Well, that's a little bit nebulous. And so I would recommend that if you're looking to create a good outcome statement, a good outcome for your program, that you stay away from the cosmic, the psychic, the overly emotional, and definitely the extraterrestrial.
Okay. So first step to create a proper outcome statement is what?
Decide what you want to be different at the end of this program.
So you're definitely looking toward
begin with the end in mind.
You say that in the book. Begin with the end in mind.
Start with what do you want to be different about a certain situation or a certain set of conditions as a result of your program. Start there. If you can't define it, then maybe you should rethink what you're doing.
And in determining that, you need to be bound in number and time and measurable?
Those are the descriptions as you're working back. But the idea is what you want to start with is a change. You want to start with being able to define a change. We've kind of alluded to this, but The basic idea with the change is what's called the BACS measures. Change in the behavior, attitude, condition, knowledge, or status of those you seek to serve. So you start with the change in their behavior, their attitude, their condition, their knowledge, or their status. And it doesn't have to be a person. It could be a forest. It could be it could be a watershed. The status goes from being threatened to not to being safe, to being protected. But the idea is you start with the change and define it. If you can't define it, then my suggestion is you start to rethink. A lot of organizations start with the problem, and then the next question is, what do we do? Well, what do we do? That's the wrong place to start. The place to start is, first off, what changes do we want to bring about? Secondly, what resources will it take to do that? Thirdly, what actions or programs will it take to effectuate that? It's a total reverse of the usual way of approaching most of these issues.
That's sort of a summary of developing your own outcome statement. And there's obviously a lot more detail in the book. Again, the book is The Nonprofit Outcomes Toolbox. We have just about a minute before the break. How do we start to apply an outcomes analysis? You have a lot of tools in the book, but how do we get there?
First off, easy thing, buy the book. But beyond that, there are any number of very, very thoughtful people who have created some of these tools that are out there. The problem is that most nonprofits don't know about them. Everybody, for example, has heard of the logic model. Well, what they don't understand is what the logic model was originally intended to be, as opposed to the way a lot of people are suggesting it be used today. There are alternatives to this, and the book is one way of finding out about them. And reinventing the wheel is not necessary. These wheels have already been invented. The question is knowing which ones work for you, and that was the whole concept behind the toolbox approach to the book that perhaps we can talk about after the break.
Okay. We are going to take a break. If you've not heard of the logic model, then you're with me. So I'm going to ask Robert after the break to just briefly talk about that. And then we're going to talk about some of the tools and lessons you can learn from the for-profit, from the corporate sector in outcomes measurement. This is Tony Martinetti, Nonprofit Radio. Stay with us.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Do you need a business plan that can guide your company's growth? Covenant 7 will help bring the changes you need. We are small business consultants, and we pay attention to the details you may miss. Our coaching and consultant services are guaranteed to lead to right growth for your business. Call us at 917-833-4860 for a no-obligation free consultation. Check out our website at www.covenant7.com.
Are you fed up with talking points rhetoric? Everywhere you turn, it's left or right spin, ideology, no reality. In fact, it's ideology over intellect. No more. It's time for the truth. Join me, Larry Sharp, a.k.a. The Neosage, Tuesday nights, 9 to 11 Eastern, for the Ivory Tower radio program. In the Ivory Tower, we'll discuss what's important to you, society, politics, business, and family. It's provocative talk for the realist and the skeptic who want to know what's really going on, what does it mean, and what can be done about it. So gain special access to the Ivory Tower and listen to me, Larry Sharp, your Neosage, Tuesday nights, 9 to 11, New York time. Go to ivorytowerradio.com for details. That's ivorytowerradio.com. The Ivory Tower is a great place to visit for both entertainment and education. Listen in, Tuesday nights, 9 to 11. It will make you smarter.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com. Talking Alternative.
Welcome back to the show, our last segment. Let's define the logic model, because maybe I know it by a different name, Robert, but you mentioned that.
That is actually the name of it. The logic model is a way that nonprofits have for some years now planned. It's one of the tools that they've used for planning how to get to the outcomes from the starting point. Right, the logic model became very well known when Kellogg adopted it, the Kellogg Foundation, same as the cereal people, the Kellogg Foundation, and United Way of America adopted it. And in both of those cases, they kind of put the word out amongst their either in the case of Kellogg, their grantees, and in the case of United Way of America, their local affiliates, that this was one of the earliest outcomes frameworks that you could potentially use. Not to do an undue plug, but in my previous book, Outcome Frameworks, that was one of the things we talked about, because the idea was there were these various models, and how do they compare one to the other, and what were the pluses and minuses of all of them? That had never been done before, which is why I wrote that previous book. But the logic model truly was meant as a graphic illustration of cause and effect within a program, that if this input will lead to that, which will lead to the third, which will lead to the fourth, and hopefully get you to the end point that you desire. The problem is it was never actually designed to be a management or tracking tool. And when organizations, and there are a lot of people, very thoughtful people, who do use it for this, personally, I think it's cumbersome. And what you wind up with, since the whole design was as a flow chart, very often you wind up with all of these various lines that are doubling back on each other. So someone I know...
Okay, so we're past that now.
We're past that.
We're in the outcomes toolbox.
Right.
And why did you choose the toolbox metaphor?
The concept of the toolbox was very simple. Let's go back to that curtain rod you and I were going to put up a few minutes ago.
Don't go back to my Eagle Scout.
No.
I'm still singed.
I'm going to go back to the curtain rod you and I are going to put up a few minutes ago without the level. Let's say you're putting up the curtain rod, and all the tools you had were craftsmen. And at one point you needed that level that I mentioned, and you say, Bob, give me a level. Well, if the level I gave you was a Stanley, would you refuse to use it because it wasn't a craftsman like all the other tools?
Probably not.
You would use the tool at hand. Okay. In the nonprofit space, most of these frameworks are proprietary. This one belongs to RAND. That one belongs to the Rensselaerville Institute. The third one's associated with this person or this institution. As a result, what traditionally happened was, let us say a representative of that organization or the consultant came in, and they would wind up basically saying to nonprofits, my model, be it A, B, C, or D, it's the bass-o-matic of outcome frameworks. It slices, it dices, it chops, it walks the dog. It does everything. The problem is, none of them do everything. All of them do something. All of them do several somethings. Some of them do some things very well, but none of them do everything well. And so what we wound up doing was inadvertently offering the space 80% solutions to 100% problems. Telling people, for example, that the logic model was the be-all and end-all was one such example. My concept is, and the reason it's called the toolbox in the book, I do not care about the authorship, the ownership, the provenance, or anything else about any of these tools. If it works, I want you to use it. And I'm not going to tell you not to use it because you're not using the other pieces of the same set. That's the concept, truly a toolbox. Reach in, grab what works for you. And if you're not oriented towards tools, think about it as a kitchen. You know, again, you know, if you have a, you know, one brand of you know, say blender and another brand of a toaster, you're not going to not use them for the same meal because they're different brands. You're going to use what you need.
Now you're in my space because
now I'm in
back
space.
From my Easy Bake Oven days.
Okay, right.
The kitchen works better for
that's
me.
That's why I went there. I could see that you was resonating with
me. I'm much more comfortable with spatulas than I am Phillips head screwdrivers. First time I used one, I had to go to the emergency room.
That's because you were trying to scrape a pan with it.
So the book has a lot of model of these tools. Mm-hmm. It talks about, I don't know, maybe it's a dozen or so. Some of the simplest ones are you get what you measure, results-based accountability, even one from McKinsey & Company, capacity assessment tool. But maybe not those necessarily, but a lot of the tools in the toolbox do emanate from corporate outcomes measurements.
Some of the latter ones.
Why is it translatable? I mean, from for-profit to not-for-profit. You know, a lot of times the not-for-profit community is worried about things that come from corporations.
Oh yeah, well, Peter Drucker.
Except for money, they're not worried about money. As investees and investors. But no, there is that fear. What are some of the lessons?
Peter Drucker made the comment that nonprofits should be run more like business, and everyone thought that you know he was an apostate and he was a heretic. I mean, my God, you know, corporations are big nasty things, and after all, we care. You know, we're the nonprofit sector. The truth of the matter is that no one is more interested in outcomes than the corporate world. Now, they tend to call their outcomes profitability, market share, etc. But the idea is they've been leading the way literally since, you know, Henry Ford was putting Model Ts out of on an assembly line. There are tools, for example, like Six Sigma. There are tools
Wait,
like...
Say that one. Say it again. Say a little slower.
There are tools like Six Sigma.
Six Sigma.
Six
okay.
Sigma. And the question is, what the hell is a Sigma and why are there six of them? That's explained in the book. It's basically a measure of quality. All right. Six Sigma focuses on how many failure rates are there per million opportunities to fail. I mean, you don't really have to get into that. But the okay. concept is, it has some key... insights. Something, for example, like TQM.
Jargon Jail. Oh, okay. You don't mean TQM, Total Quality Management.
Yeah, no, I didn't mean that. I mean, CTQ, that's what it's called. I'm not going to lock myself in Jargon Jail. What it means is critical to quality. Most nonprofits, when they're designing a program, do not ask this question as the corporate world does. If corporate world is launching an effort, one of the first things under Six Sigma they would do is say, what is the most critical part of this that we need to have? If a nonprofit were to adopt that kind of concept and that kind of analysis, it could go very, very far towards helping them focus on the most important parts of a program, the key things that they absolutely must have. But this is a perspective that is very often far into the nonprofit space, but very, very built into the corporate space, particularly if they're using something like Six Sigma.
I see a future master's degree in nonprofit outcomes engineering.
Yeah, perfect. Exactly. That would be exactly. But when we have maybe in a moment or two, we can talk about something called ServQual, which they use in Pizza Hut. If you imagine, think a tool from Pizza Hut being used in the nonprofit space. Now, that's the suggestion that we can talk about.
Regrettably, we're out of moments.
Oh, we're out of moments.
The lesson is, don't be fearful of what comes from the nonprofit from the for-profit sector, because these are all important, easily quantified things that corporations are focusing on, like earnings per share in a quarter, right?
Exactly. And how do you get there? What do you need to do to get there? Right.
The book is The Nonprofit Outcomes Toolbox, A Complete Guide to Program Effectiveness, Performance Measurement, and Results, published by Wiley and Sons. You'll find Robert Penna's blog at outcomestoolbox.com. Robert, thank you very much for being on the show. Pleasure.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure. I enjoyed it immensely.
Thank you. Very valuable interview and a really valuable book, that Nonprofit Outcomes Toolbox. I got to start sending live listener love because we have in-studio love. It's incredible. My sister-in-law, Christy Weber, my niece by marriage, Maraca Weber, my father-in-law, which also happens to be by marriage, Pete Drum, live in the studio. It's unbelievable. Friends, Jason Kapoor and Mark Silverman, friends of mine from here in the city, and a visitor from Bodenheim, Germany, Julia Reitz. Julia, guten Tag. All live listeners, all in the studio at this moment. Of course, we've got live listeners around the world, including Kandahar, Afghanistan, which is where my nephew is listening from. Shout out to him in Afghanistan. Right now, we take a break. When we come back, Tony's Take Two, and then Amy Sample Ward, Optimize Your Social Profiles. Hang in there.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. Call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
Hi, I'm Austin Marola.
And I'm Sloan Wainwright.
We're the hosts of the new Thursday morning show, The Music
Power Hour.
At 11 a.m.
We're going to have fun.
And shine the light on all aspects of music.
And its limitless healing possibilities.
We're going to invite artists to share their songs and play live.
We'll be listening and talking about great music from yesterday to today.
So you're invited to share in our musical conversation.
Your ears will be delighted with the sound of music.
And our voices. Join Austin.
And Sloan.
Live Thursdays at 11 a.m. on TalkingAlternative.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Hi, this is Claire Meyerhoff from the Plan Giving Agency. If you have big dreams but a small budget, you have a home at Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio.
Welcome back to Big Nonprofit Ideas for the Other 95%. Let's move into Tony's Take Two. This week on my blog is Let's Help a Nonprofit Listener. Listener Matt from Minnesota emailed me a question that his office was having a problem with. Seems that about 6,000 of their end-of-year appeal letters went out asking people for the wrong donation amount because the spreadsheets or the query didn't quite line up, and it had incorrect previous year's donation amounts. So a $50 donor from 2012 was said in the letter to have given $1,500 and was asked for a $2,000 gift when something more like $75 or $100 would have been appropriate. And that went out to about 6,000 people. So Matt was wondering, what do you think we should do? And I've got a bunch of comments on the blog from people around the country offering advice, and you can give your advice also. Most of the comments run along the lines of send a very contrite letter, you know, apologize very explicitly and say that you're taking steps so that it never happens again, and that, you know, we value every donor, we're very sorry, and please don't stop supporting us. That's the way most of the comments run. But you can give your advice to Matt in Minnesota. The post is called Let's Help a Nonprofit Listener, and it's on my blog at tonymartinetti.com. Also want you to know that I'm going to be at BBCon this coming Monday, the 30th of September. BBCon is the Black Bod Conference. It's going to be at the Gaylord Conference Center outside Washington, D.C. I'll be there all day Monday doing interviews for the show. We've got interviews lined up on mobile giving, Giving Tuesday, which is a hashtag on Twitter, getting different society level gifts, building a fundraising board, fraud protection, and a bunch more. Amy Sample Ward will be there as well. I'll be talking to her, as if we don't talk to her enough, but she's going to be there at BBCon also. And I'm giving away some consulting time on Monday. 2 hours. There's two different ways to win 1 hour of consulting time. You can either tweet on using the hashtag Nonprofit Radio on Monday. And if you do that, you'll be entered into a contest. And the other way is if you're at BBCon, come to the stage where I'll be doing the interviews on the exhibit floor and drop your business card in the bowl. And I'll select a business card at the end of the day. And one of you at the conference will win a free hour of consulting. It's your choice. You can have either planned giving consulting or charity registration. Two different ways to win. I'm giving away 2 hours of free consulting on Monday. So I hope to either see you at BBCon or see your tweets using the hashtag Nonprofit Radio. And that is Tony's Take Two for Friday, 27th of September, 38th show of the year. I'm always privileged to welcome Amy Sample Ward back. She's the CEO of the Nonprofit Technology Network, N10. Her most recent co-authored book is Social Change, Anytime, Everywhere, about online multi-channel engagement. Her blog is amysampleward.org, and she's at AmyRSWard on Twitter. Welcome back, Amy.
Thanks for having me.
You sound terrific. You're in Toronto on Skype, right?
I am. Can you hear me okay?
Actually, yes. It sounds very, very good. Actually, sounds almost sort of studio quality. You must be in a nice quiet room. What are you doing in Toronto?
I'm not. I'm actually in a hallway, but oh. I'm glad it sounds good. I'm here for Artez Interaction. It was a conference yesterday, and it was a lot of fun. Actually, people from all different sides of the nonprofit technology topic coming together, and a lot of case studies sharing what they had been working on, things like that.
Okay, and you want to share one thing that is memorable for you so far from the conference?
I was really excited how many people were there ready to talk about data, not as a like idea, but people saying, oh, so we've been measuring X and we have seen this trend. Have you seen it? You know, and really jumping into conversations with the expectation that everyone else was also really looking at their impact, really trying to quantify what they were doing and, you know, share their tips or commiserate in some failures together.
Cool. Sounds like a lot of valuable crosstalk. All right.
Yeah.
And I guess you're going from Toronto to Washington area for BBCon?
Yep, exactly.
Okay. We'll talk about that a little later. I know I'll be seeing you there. But we want to talk about today optimizing your social profile. So we're getting a little, little tactical today. Sometimes we're strategic and a little theoretical, but always valuable. But today we'll be a little tactical. We gotta keep our social profiles, whether it's Facebook, Twitter. These have to be aligned with our work. How do we make sure we're doing that?
Well, I think a lot of people start from this place where they have heard that, you know, social channels, all these social profiles are an opportunity to extend their brand or, really make themselves visible out there. And so they hear these kind of jargon jail type phrases and think, oh, great, so we just put up a Facebook page and, you know, slap our logo on it just like our website. Excuse me. But in reality, that's not what extending your brand is, but also doesn't match what's happening there. It isn't a good representation of your mission. So how can those channels really serve that goal? Well, think about it not just as here's your logo as your profile picture, but who are the people behind your organization or who are the supporters? You know, how do you let those social channels be social, but also really clear photos, text, etc., that explain just what you do. You know, it's an opportunity on a web, website-like presence that's different but targeted across the web. When I think about organizations that do kind of mission direction well, you whatever channel you're on, you know it's there, but it feels different. Each one feels like, you know, a different room in the same house,
right,
for example. You know, the living room is maybe still the same style of the people that live there, but it has more couches and maybe a fireplace. And then you go into the kitchen, and again, it's maybe the same style as the people that live there, but this is where, you know, there's more lights, there's a bunch of cookery, etc. So how do you make that on the different social profiles? Well, first of all, don't forget that they're trying to help you. You know, you don't want to try and hide all of the different components of that Facebook page, for example. Let those pieces be there because people on Facebook expect them to be there. Use them to your advantage. You know, you don't empty all the furniture out of every room where it's all the way across the house. Really, make those couches the best darn couches they can be in that living room, even though maybe they're your branded colors.
And Amy,
metaphor makes any sense, but
before you start there, I mean, you have to take a look at which channels you should even be in. You know, you're talking about aligning
exactly
with where your people are. You know, you have to know that and what sites are appropriate for your work and your people.
Exactly. And some of that, you know, I'm always surprised when I think data is important and helpful and valuable. And if you can look at data to say, oh, wow, you know, the demographics of these certain tools are that, you know, our community is probably there. That's only one side of the equation. Just because you may have a bunch of, you know, parents between the ages of 36 and 45 in your community, it doesn't mean that they necessarily want to be engaging with your programs and content on Facebook just because demographically they are probably on Facebook. They maybe see Facebook as a you know, a place to go share photos of the kids with their parents, you know, when it's 9 o'clock at night and they've finally gotten to have half an hour to themselves. They don't want to spend the half hour with you. You know, maybe there's a different channel for engaging with your community beyond just what the demographics say. So I think you have to also look at what is the content you're even delivering. Just because your people maybe are on Twitter, the content you're sharing with them maybe can't ever fit in 140 characters, or maybe isn't something they're going to pick out of their Twitter stream. You know, anyone who's just opened up Twitter and let it sit there, it's just flowing by. So finding a match between, like you said, your community and the channel, but also your content in the channel. It may just not make sense to be posted there.
Okay, we're gonna take a break, and we'll Amy and I have a little extra time today, so we're gonna keep talking about aligning your work with the social networks, where you ought to be, how to keep consistent with the brand, and even, you know, if you happen to be in a campaign, how to do that promotion successfully. And when we come right back, it'll be more Live Listener Love. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
Have you ever considered consulting a roadmap when you feel you need help getting to your destination? When the normal path seems blocked, a little help can come in handy when choosing an alternate route. Your natal chart is a map of your potentials. It addresses relationships, finance, business, health, and above all, creativity. Current planetary cycles can either support or challenge your objectives. I'm Montgomery Taylor. If you would like to explore the help of a private astrological reading, please contact me at Monty@MontyTaylor.com. That's Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, @MontyTaylor.com.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Lots more Live Listener Love. We've got listeners in Moscow, in Chongqing, Beijing, and Shenzhen, China. For those in China, ni hao. Seoul, Korea. Seoul always checks in. Always multiple people in Seoul. I love that. Annyeonghaseyo for our listeners in Korea. And also Tokyo, Japan. Frequently have people from Japan. Konnichiwa. All right, Amy. We gotta get into some details here, so we don't leave people, which I know concerns you as well. You know, we don't want to leave people with more questions than answers.
Exactly.
So let's get in. I mean, how would you test whether Twitter? That's a great example because it does go by so fast. What questions would you ask to determine whether Twitter is a good platform for you?
Well, I think we've talked about this on the show before, and that is, try to do some research. Ask people directly, you know, do you want to be engaging with us on this channel? A, are you using this channel? You know, just try and get that information. But there's nothing like the empirical proof of just testing it and, you know, setting up a profile, even if it isn't, you know, necessarily the most intense organizational profile and you have a massive content strategy, if you just want to devote a couple weeks to testing the channel, test it out, see how it goes, keep track of what you're doing. You know, organizations that have really been able to increase the amount of engagement on Twitter have done things like, you know, don't just track, oh, we tweeted and people reply to us, but say, what time of day did the most retweets happen? Not just when did you tweet, but when were other people finding your content and reposting it, you know? Or how many times did people reply or retweet a certain post versus another one? Okay, what was special about that content? You know, really trying to understand the mechanics of what's going on with the community there, because, you know, again, it is both the content and the people that you have to try and match. So testing it out is the only way to really, you know, prove what does or what doesn't work.
Okay, and then, of course, you have all your analytical tools also.
Exactly.
Okay. Let's talk about the profile now, since, you know, we're supposed to be focusing on the profile. What you get, let's keep with the Twitter example, but then we'll look at a couple others because you and I have some extra time together today.
Cool.
Twitter, you're limited in the number of characters you can devote to your profile. How do you know what belongs in there?
Well, I think what belongs, first of all, is the shortest version of what you can say about your mission. Next is who it is that's tweeting, because at the end of the day, no one thinks it's actually, quote unquote, your organization. They know it's some staff person or people. So call it out, make that transparent. And then lastly is including a link back to either your web, to your website, but I would encourage you not to just use the homepage of your website, to send people to a more tailored entry, whether that's, you know, maybe a community page where you link to your different social profiles and then expect people to be, you know, clicking back and saying, oh, this is where, you know, they engage, or maybe you have a specific program area you want to link to, but include that direct connection back to the website.
Let's talk about Facebook profiles. If you've gone through your analytics, you've determined that Facebook is a suitable platform for you. Is what you're going to do on your Facebook profile is going to be different than Twitter? I mean, it allows more media too.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, it's what you do with that profile, especially on a channel like Facebook, where there's just so much content opportunity. You're setting the tone for how you want people to engage with that page. Are you, do you have a really engaging, bright, fun, you know, header photo and you are posting photos along with your text? Well, that's encouraging the community to also post that. You know, that's the content they see is on the page. Or are you, do you not even have a header image and then you just have your logo as your profile photo and you're just, you know, constantly posting links to your website? Well, if that's the example, no one's going to post because they don't have a link to your website to share, you know? So really think about it as like, here's the example of what you want the community to do and build it out around that, which is why, you know, some of the most engaging Facebook pages, the ones that have, you know, the most number of people that like it but also consistently engage with the page, are ones that have photos of the community or, you know, photos from events that the organization has done. Things where people go to the page and they see it as, here's that window into the programs and the impact the organization is having. And I, of course you want to be there. Don't you want to be a part of the fun impact and, you know, making that mission happen? Of course, you know, because on our websites, we certainly think that's what people see on our websites, but they just get so heavy and bogged down with every piece of content we've ever created. And, you know, on those social profiles, we get to highlight the really great engaging pieces first.
Here we are talking about Twitter, and I get quick phone alerts when I get a new Twitter follower. I just got a new Twitter follower as we're sitting here talking about Twitter. Happens to be my niece who's sitting in the studio, but you know, we take whatever the hell we can get.
Perfect.
And if you want to join my niece, you can follow me at Tony Martinetti. Let's keep going, because you know I get a little troubled always talking about just Twitter and Facebook. Let's pick another couple profile. What's another site that you see nonprofits spending time on and doing well? And again, after you've been through your own analytics and you've tested it, as Amy was describing, you've described that this other channel, which Amy's about to talk about, might make sense for you. What should your profile look like on that channel? What do you want to talk about, Amy?
You know, I've seen some nonprofits recently really doing a great job on Instagram. And, you know, it's obviously a more niche platform, so you're not going to see, you know, on Facebook, sometimes you see a big organization has, like, you know, 1,000 likes on a post or on a image, and you're just not going to have 1,000 likes on your Instagram photo or video, but you're still going to have some, you know. And what I think is great is that organizations, you're already planning and creating this content. Well, if you have images, then you have what you need on Instagram. So, you know, each channel can be the same, quote unquote, like course, but just packaged in different ways that make sense for that channel. So including Instagram in your list of outlets, I think is a great thing to test out, to try, see if you have community there, because it's so unlike Facebook, where if you posted, you know, multiple posts and multiple photos in one day, people would, you know, get a little turned off. The algorithm is hiding your post already from, you know, most of your fans. Instagram, there's no filter. No one, you know, whatever is in the feed is in the feed. And it's not the kind of channel where organizations are seeing, like, if you post multiple times in a day, people are getting tired of it. Instead, they're like, oh, cool, what are you doing now? You know, because that's the culture of that channel is, cool, what's the photo? What are you doing now?
Yeah.
And just kind of scrolling through them.
Okay. Now, you and I devoted a segment not too long ago to Tumblr. So, and listeners can go back and look for that. So we'll skip Tumblr. But what's another site you'd like to talk about? Same, you know, what should your profile be focused on?
Yeah, I mean, I think one, as far as like this conversation of extending your brand and really you leveraging what the components of that platform are to engage people, you know, bring them into your content. I think YouTube is super underutilized because for nonprofits, you can have so many of the additional YouTube customization tools and components for free. So you can have a totally branded YouTube channel. You can have, you know, calls to action in your videos. I mean, there's just so much that nonprofits are missing out because, you know, even if you don't have huge, like, documentaries, it's not hard to create videos, especially now that, you know, we can all create them with our phone even. So having these short pieces, whether captured at events or you know, even like a 30-second video that says, we're about to launch this campaign tomorrow, you know, get ready. And it's just kind of there to make people feel like they're in the know and they're part of your work. Again, because you can post it to a channel that's totally branded. You can have like kind of like folders, you know, here are all the videos about this topic and people can scroll through. I just think there's a lot of potential with YouTube nonprofits aren't tapping.
Okay. Maybe we should devote a show to YouTube.
Let's do it.
Okay. Okay. And those folders, I'm pretty sure you're referring to playlists. You can have playlists on different topics. Like on mine, there's BBCon 2012. There's different conferences I've been to. There's one for stand-up comedy. I think that's the folders you're referring to.
Yep, exactly.
They're called playlists. Okay. All right, you know, since we have the luxury of time, is there one more channel you want to talk about? No? Okay. I don't want to put you on the spot. Okay.
Okay. I'll think about it.
No, that's okay. We got other topics. We don't have to talk about depth on channels. Let's talk about your campaign. If you happen to have a campaign, sure. Whether it's a 30-day campaign or, you know, more traditional sort of campaigns, you know, might last 3-4 years. You know, some capital campaigns go on that long. How do you expose that campaign within these the social sites profiles?
Well, I mean, this goes back to the earlier point about really taking advantage of the specific functionality that each platform has, you know, unique to it. Like with Facebook, because that's, we've already said, is a very easy example, you have two photos that you get to take advantage of. You have that big header image, but then you also have your profile photo. And again, just as how you are setting the tone for the kind of engagement you want there, campaigns have also been really successful at taking advantage of that profile photo and encouraging people to share that and make it their own profile photo and really spreading the campaign message or brand that way. And, you know, because Facebook makes it very easy to just click on something and say, make this my profile photo. Whereas, you know, on other channels, it may not be quite as easy. But you see similar profile photo-based campaign extensions on Twitter, you know, where they have, you know, I think it's called a Twibbon, or things like that, where you're just adding kind of an image layer on top of a photo. So it has a little, you know, I'm sure you've seen them, stars or a little banner along the bottom that says, you know, maybe that campaign hashtag, et cetera. So I think that's a really clear call to action for a campaign is like, okay, today we're launching, everyone make this your profile photo, for example. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the most recent, very large-scale examples of that was the HRC campaign about turning Facebook red.
Oh, okay. Oh, HRC, human rights campaign. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And you know, beyond just the image on the various profiles associated to a campaign, you also have the opportunity if you are, you know, say running a campaign where you're really encouraging engagement on Twitter and you know you have a specific campaign hashtag, well, go edit your Twitter bio to say, we are running this campaign, this is the hashtag, learn more, so that as people retweet your tweets and they're like, oh, my friend retweeted this, I'm going to check them out, they don't open up, you know, your Twitter profile and see, okay, so you're some organization based wherever. You know, make sure that you're actually updating the profile information on those different channels when you're running a campaign and not just the image, or don't just start posting the content. Make sure that, you know, the profile itself, when people find you, explains the campaign and not just your organization.
It's probably so easy to forget to update your profile.
Yeah.
Here you are doing all this multi-channel strategy around a campaign, and then you forget to talk about it in your and publicize it in your profiles.
Exactly.
Because you set the profile up, you know, it's not something that people keep up to date, and that's sort of, I mean, that's really subsumed
it's
in everything,
a huge miss,
everything you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've got news all the time. Profile is not something you only look at when you set up the account and then never look
exactly
at again. It's all subsumed in what you're saying.
Right.
Okay.
And especially during campaign times when you're getting, in theory, hopefully, a lot more new people seeing your social profile. Well, they're seeing it for the first time. They want to know why five of their friends were just talking about you. And if all that you have is information about your general mission, well, they don't know why their friends were talking about you. You know, it's a great place to put some of those campaign hooks and calls to action.
Just in a couple minutes, we want to emphasize something that you and I have always talked about. This is not only multi-channel online, but your offline strategies have to coordinate with all this as well.
Exactly.
So that includes your...
And so if you're, you know, planning to have any direct mail pieces, you know, make sure those match up, and it's a great way to, I think we've talked about this before, time direct mail drops with when you launch things online. So send an email that says, hey, we're going to be, you know, ramping up for this campaign. A couple days later, a direct mail piece comes, and then, you know, that same day or the next day, you really launch it on social. Well, by the time you tweet it, they've already seen it three times in really personal ways. They got an email, they got a, you know, postcard, and now you posted about it on Twitter, they're ready to actually engage.
Excellent. Okay. We have to leave that topic there. It's time for your first 60-second style stop. We added this. We're talking about either travel or leisure or food. What do you have? 60 seconds only. 60-second style stop.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I was thinking about this today because I am actually traveling, and my, at least my personal tip is whatever I need right after I land, whether it's my pajamas or, you know, some food, whatever, I put that in my, like, purse or carry-on bag because I hate feeling like I have to unpack my entire suitcase just to go to bed when I get to the hotel at midnight or something, you know? That way, whatever you actually need in your first few hours where you land is in the same bag.
Outstanding. Cool. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
From a hallway in Toronto, Amy Sample Ward.
Exactly.
Amy Sample Ward, CEO of Nonprofit Technology Network. You'll find her blog, amysampleward.org, and on Twitter, at Amy R. S. Ward. And I'll be seeing you on Monday with your co-author, Allison Capon, right?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, cool. Me too. Haven't seen you for a while. Bye, Amy.
Bye. Thanks.
Got some last-minute live listener love. New Bern, North Carolina. Paradise Valley, Arizona. Bloomfield, New Jersey. And Billancourt, France. Welcome, live listener love. And of course, always, to our podcast listeners, podcast pleasantries. Always grateful for the podcast listeners. Next week, Roger Matloff and Joy Hunter Shayu are the co-authors of Nonprofit Investment and Development Solutions, A Guide to Thriving in Today's Economy, and they will be with me for the hour. Over 9,000 leaders, fundraisers, and board members of small and mid-sized charities listen each week. You know how to reach me if you'd like to talk about sponsoring the show. We've got one that's going to be starting next week, early October. Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. Sam Liebowitz is our line producer. The show's social media is by Deborah Askenaze of Community Organizer 2.0. The remote producer of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio is John Federico of The New Rules. And our music is by Scott Stein. I hope you'll be with me next Friday, 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern, on Talking Alternative Broadcasting at talkingalternative.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you a female entrepreneur ready to break through? Join us at Sexy Body, Sassy Soul, where women are empowered to ask for and receive what they truly want in love, life, and business. Tune in Thursdays at noon Eastern Time to learn tips and juicy secrets from inspiring women and men who dare to define their success. Get inspired, stay motivated, and define your version of joy and success with Sexy Body, Sassy Soul, every Thursday at noon New York Time on TalkingAlternative.com.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. Call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
This is Tony Martinetti, the aptly named host of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Technology, fundraising, compliance, social media. Small and medium nonprofits have needs in all these areas. My guests are expert in all these areas and more. Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, Fridays, 1 to 2 Eastern on Talking Alternative Broadcasting.
Are you concerned about the future of your business or career? Would you like it all to just be better? Well, the way to do that is through better communication. And the best way to do that is training from the team at Improving Communications. This is Larry Sharp, host of the Ivory Tower Radio program and director at Improving Communications. Does your office need better leadership, customer service, sales, or maybe better writing or speaking skills? Could they be better at dealing with confrontation, conflicts, and touchy subjects? all are covered here at Improving Communications. If you're in the New York City area, stop by one of our public classes or get your human resources in touch with us. The website is improvingcommunications.com. That's improvingcommunications.com. Improve your professional environment. Be more effective. Be happier and make more money. Improving communications. That's the answer.
TalkingAlternative.com.